Tom Fortino checks in now from the Alpha Wealth Group. AlphaWealthGroup.com is the website. How about that, Tom? If we hit it today, we break the record back to 1897 of consecutive improved days on the Dow.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible, going back to the 1800s. So that's a pretty impressive pretty impressive record to break.
What does it mean? Why is it doing that, Tom?
Well, you know, I don't want to say it's anybody's guess, but, you know, this is not uncommon when we start to see rotations, you know, from one sector or from one index. You know, you look at the NASDAQ, 50% technology, of course, that's performing the best this year by far. And so those valuations, right, we talked about the Magnificent Seven, and they're really, they're the ones that have been driving. They're 20%, 27% now of the index. They're the ones that have been driving a lot of these things. Some people say, look, they're overvalued, they're overbought. So there's a rotation into these other areas, whether it's more value or it's small cap. You've seen the Russell 2000 has been outperforming. So that's, again, kind of the natural order of things, where there's going to be rotation out of sectors and asset classes and so on. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing.
Did I not hear, though, the Fed chair says now he doesn't think we're going to have a recession? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, again, nobody knows the future. But when you start to look at some of these, there's three main indicators really right now that portend a recession. One, interest rates, again, rising sharply. The yield curve, of course, I'm sure it's been talked about ad nauseum as far as the yield curve inversion, and then, of course, the leading economic indicators. Those are all negative, and those all lead towards the direction of having a recession. Now, that said, I guess we don't know. We're going to see. I don't think it's going to be in the near term, but certainly there's indicators out there that suggest it's going to happen.
Well, he's not saying that he's not going to raise interest rates, though. It sounds like another quarter point might still be in the offing, right?
He's saying that, you know, again, there's opinion on the other side to say he has to say that, right? What's he going to say? I'm going to start, he's got to kind of hold his cards tight to the chest there as far as what he's going to do. Now, will he do that? We'll see in September, but it's not, I can't imagine it's going to be much more of an increase going forward. There is some concern. You know, he's acted in some, he's kind of talked out of both sides of mouth a little bit. He's been a little hawkish, saying, look, we're going to keep pushing it. On the other side, you know, he's not. So it's kind of hard to tell really where he's going to go with this.
Well, they want to be data dependent, so I can understand why he wouldn't. I mean, I think they've been in trouble when they've said, well, this is what it is before we really know what it is. Sometimes you got to wait it out, right?
There's a lag time in just about everything. So, yeah, you take a breath, relax, and let's see what happens, right? Because we're seeing these trends. And I guess, you know, the takeaway from a lot of this for the average investor and all is you can't predict the future. I mean, you really have to be careful about making these big moves. This is where we get burned, as we've talked about in the past, John. You know, who would have known home builders would be up 40% this year? You know, when we see these things that happen in the market, and then, you know, last year when the NASDAQ was down 30%, you said, I've got to get out of these tech stocks, I've got to do something. And then you get out, and now they're up 30%, say, time to get back in. You know, that's the emotional piece. And that's really where, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's the time in the market, not the timing. We just can't time the market. So that's just a caution, I would say, to the average investor. Well, you can always look for opportunities, but be careful.
I got that, and I need a short answer to this. But having said that, would you say that one of the indexes is maybe a better place right now, the Dow or the NASDAQ or the Russell or I missed one, the S&P?
Yeah, I think if you're looking for some that there's some participation, you know, that there's been some undervalue, yeah, you could look at some of the small cap places and maybe even certain sectors of the economy. Take a look at those, the exchange traded funds, and look at buying certain sectors.
I'll ask you next time we visit where that might be. Maybe you'll talk about that on a Sunday morning. The founder and principal at Alpha Wealth Group, that's Tom Fortino. You can find him at alphawealthgroup.com. Real interesting, Tom. Thanks for your help today.
All right. You take care, John.
Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET. Talk to me about the latest with Meta, Bree. Let's start there today.
Well, they reported their quarterly earnings yesterday, and they actually did better than expected. The revenue was up 11%, and profit increased about 16%. You know, this is a big deal for them and kind of, you know, that part of the tech industry as a whole, which, you know, up till now had kind of been struggling, especially in the eyes of Wall Street.
Does Threads have anything to do with that?
Well, it definitely gave them some notoriety. Whether they're making any money off of it, I don't know. You know, they're probably getting more traffic and making more money from ads. But that definitely was a notable thing that happened during the quarter. And then also, you know, they've rolled out new AI technology that, you know, could help them with online advertising as well.
A lot of us are on Threads now, but we're not doing much with it. But it just seemed to be the thing all of us hip kids do. And with the consensus among my friends is that we're happy to see Twitter, you know, have a comeuppance, but Threads isn't ready. And you might, you know, be sorry if you roll something out too soon and then people pass on it when if they'd waited a little longer and got it right, it would be in the long term more viable. What do you think of that, Bree?
Well, I'm not really sure if it's that it wasn't ready. It's just maybe we weren't ready for it. You know, I signed up the first day like a lot of people, but I admit I haven't really looked at it a whole lot. I am still looking at Twitter all the time, mm-hmm. mainly because it's kind of like watching Rome burn in a lot of ways. But, you know, Threads, it because it's a lot of stuff that came over from my Instagram, it's not the kind of work-related content that I look for on Twitter. It's not news and information. It's, you know, my friends and dog rescues and bread and, you know, fun stuff like that. So, you know, I need to do the work and sit down and start, you know, following accounts that I used to follow on Twitter. And I think once people actually do that, then maybe traffic will start to pick up.
It's interesting you say, though, I've got to do the work, which is maybe the roadblock for even a Meta-sized app, is that it takes a while to start following people and for it to have relevant traffic for you. The app icon on my phone is still a white bird on a blue background, but I do see that some of the accounts I follow have an X next to them. What do you make of their new icon?
Yeah, it's very strange. My icon is also still the blue bird, but when you go to Twitter's website on your laptop, there is an X where the bird used to be. And this was another quirky thing that Elon Musk did to, I'm not quite sure why exactly, to kind of change Twitter and maybe move it forward in his eyes. But it is very stark and very strange to look at. Who knows?
I think he did it because he's a 12-year-old. So let's talk about electric chargers that are in the news. Seven automakers say they plan to nearly double the number of fast chargers in the U.S. Will they be interchangeable? Will Chevy work for Ford, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, these will be the kind of not the Tesla specific chargers, but kind of the more universal charger that all of the other automakers use. And they will be the quick charging ones where you can, you know, replenish your battery in about 30 minutes, which, you know, compared to pumping gas is still a long amount of time, but it beats, you know, the several hours or overnight that you might do at home. Yeah. You know, range anxiety and being able to find a charging station if you're on a road trip has been a, you know, roadblock for electric vehicles in general, especially outside of big cities. People are just scared they're not going to be able to find a charger, you know, when they're out there, maybe outside of their usual driving zone.
Can you put into manageable terms for me the difference in cost between the cost of gasoline versus the cost of electricity, either at home or at one of these charging stations? How much money do I save, or what's the cost per mile? Is there any way to sort of explain that to me?
It's not an apples to apples comparison. It's kind of tough to do that because, you know, at home charging would depend on, you know, local electric rates and just kind of, you know, how things work in your community and, you know, what you're driving as well. You know, it is cheaper to run an electric vehicle under most circumstances. I mean, gas prices fluctuate, things like that. But, you know, you have to think about the environmental impact. And, you know, when we've been dealing with air quality advisories and smog, it's really in everyone's best interest to just get emissions off the roads and out of the air.
I understand that. I saw an article this week headlined 20% of the energy in a electric car battery is lost in this kind of heat. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like your cell phone. It's a lithium ion battery. It's just on a much larger scale. Heat and extreme cold are not good for batteries in general. They just don't run as efficiently. You know, back in the day when, you know, these vehicles first started coming out, there were battery fires occasionally were, you know, pretty scary with Teslas and the Volt that General Motors made, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff. Your gasoline-powered car is not going to be as efficient in the heat either, especially if you're blasting the AC.
I'm not very efficient in the heat. What's the latest on Sam Bankman-Fried? I see you guys have something about that, too.
Yeah, the prosecutors in charge of his case have dropped a handful of campaign finance charges that they originally were going to pursue. It has to do kind of more with international relations than a technicality, dealing with the government of the Bahamas, which extradited him per the U.S.'s request. Apparently, they claim that they were not prepared to do that for campaign finance charges. So rather than deal with extradition issues, they've just decided to drop those charges. But he still is set to face 7 charges when he goes to trial in October, you know, that deal with accusations that he defrauded customers and lenders of FTX, which was the cryptocurrency exchange that he ran and subsequently collapsed.
Hmm. What's the final chapter for him going to be?
You know, I don't know. I see this kind of going to trial in the fall. I think it'll be really interesting, you know, especially if the government can show a paper trail. You know, they're claiming fraud, that he, you know, siphoned billions of dollars that customers had put into FTX to do everything from finance campaigns to make charitable donations and buy a heck of a lot of real estate.
Yeah, it's funny because he was all the rage. That is, before this story broke and the values dropped, and then afterwards, when a lot of us were first discovering him, I had never heard of Sam Bankman-Fried until FTX went poop, and then I saw this guy with sandals, long hair, and an untucked, unironed shirt, and I went, "That's who you're giving your money to?" But he was really a darling of investors for a while.
You know, and that's part of a con artist. I mean, people loved Bernie Madoff back in the day too. They trusted him, they gave him money, and you know, this may play out. You know, keep in mind he has not been convicted, but you know, it may come to light that this is, you know, the same kind of pyramid scheme.
And I get your point, even though the image of Bernie Madoff and Sam Bankman-Fried are different. These were charismatic guys that somehow captured people's imagination. They seemed to have the secret sauce. And so their appearance sort of conveyed some of the message, the conservative, smarter than everybody else in the room thing with Bernie. And then the kind of carefree genius who was ahead of the curve. That was Bankman-Fried's vibe, but it appeared to be not. And that's all the time I got, Bree. It's nice to talk to you today.
Great to be with you.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we roll along with Karina Ritchie, the general manager at the Lone Buffalo. The website is Tangled Roots Brewing Company because they have a Tangled Roots Brew House, and that beer is served at the Lone Buffalo restaurant. It's owned and operated by the same business. And Karina Ritchie is the general manager of the restaurant there, if I'm not mistaken. Karina, this is John. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you? Yes, I am the general manager here at the Lone Buffalo.
Describe that place for us. You know, this is our hometown today, Ottawa, and that's where you're located. So we're going to tell people in this segment a little bit about a popular spot, actually an important business driver for that town. Talk to us about the Lone Buffalo.
The Lone Buffalo is a beautiful two-story building. We opened back in 2016. We have a couple different components to our restaurant. We have an upstairs, which features a private dining room. We have a downstairs main dining room where we have that features our beautiful copper brew house. And then we have a tap room on the side of our building.
Yeah.
We're all one big happy family here.
That copper that you're talking about, when you're sitting in the restaurant, you see two, I think it is, enormous copper, it's not distilling, brewing units where the beer is actually cooked and made. And it's a really cool vibe. It's a nice, big, airy interior. Talk to us a little bit about the menu, Karina.
Oh, the menu is great. We are kind of an upscale brew pub, so we feature some really great dishes that we just kind of upscale them, like our mozzabella, which is a half pound of mozzarella cheese that is panko crusted and fried, so it's not your typical cheese stick, but we made it a little bit more elevated with some delicious vodka sauce. It's one of our amazing new features on our menu.
You have prime rib now on the menu,
prime
did I see?
Prime rib.
Yeah, on Saturday
nights. Yes, on Saturdays.
Yeah. Good burgers, good chicken sandwich. Just give me a couple of other items on the menu.
We have a wonderful pasta. It's a vodka pasta with some asparagus. It's delicious. It's a really great vegetarian dish with taking the sausage out, or you can leave the sausage in and even add a little chicken or shrimp to it to even elevate it a little bit more. We have steaks on our menu. We go from burgers and handhelds. We have a chef's feature on our menu right now that one of our chefs created, a wonderful Cubano sandwich. People are raving about it. So it is one of our wonderful features from our kitchen.
Sometimes people get a flight of beers when they're at the Lone Buffalo. Is that right?
Yes. You can choose four of our beers to put in a flight. And we feature anywhere from 15 to 20 beers on tap. So we have lots of different options available for anybody's taste.
And those are, many of them or all of them, are the in-house brews, is that right?
Yes, all of them except for a cider that we just, we do source out for a cider. But other than that, they are all brewed here at the Lone Buffalo.
We're talking to Karina Ritchie, who's the general manager there. And what are the popular beers on the menu? Is there one staple that you're all really proud of that you sell a lot of?
We sell a lot of our core beers. Our Devil's Paint Box is very popular. Our Kit Kufa, people know that one. We just put an Honest Haze on tap recently that has become one of our core beers also. So that's a little bit of a hazy IPA, but it's got a lot of fruity elements to it. We offer seasonal beers. We're going to be coming out with our very popular Oktoberfest here very soon in August.
If you like an IPA, that Devil's Paint Box is really good. Oh. That's my go-to.
That's the go-to, yes.
But I've had a cocktail there before, too. Kind of, it's like an old-fashioned or a Manhattan, but it's got like a vanilla-y flavor to it. The Lincoln something, does that ring a bell?
Oh, yes. It's our Honest Abe. It has been our best-selling cocktail since we opened our doors. It's delicious. We use some few bourbon in that, and yes, you can taste a little vanilla. And we use some bourbon cherries to round it out.
It's really a different drink, and it's really surprising. It's delightful. 630 says, hey, John, my son's rehearsal dinner was held at Tangled Roots in the private room upstairs. Great time, food, drinks. The wedding was at Starved Rock. We've thought about that before. When you come into this restaurant, the Lone Buffalo in Ottawa, it's on the main drag in town. But when you go in, the dining area is right in front of you. The bar is to the left. If you go up the stairs, sometimes they'll seat you there. But if you ever wanted to have a private function, that's a really nice space.
Yes, we do. Janet Lindy does an amazing job at our private events. She is wonderful as my private event manager. And we host everything from business dinners to baby showers to weddings, anything you want to do.
You guys are pretty busy in the summer, Karina?
Very.
Yeah, just talk about that a little bit. I mean, there you were before the pandemic, through the pandemic, and now. How's business? How have you all evolved over the last couple of years?
Business is growing very wonderfully, rapidly. We have all kinds of people that come in, whether they're skydiving at Skydive Chicago, hiking out at Starved Rock, staying out at Heritage Harbor. They come in. They want to come into our facility. They buy packaged beer, have dinner. We have people from everywhere. I meet people from a different state every shift I work. And it's great to hear everybody's stories and just to see. You can come in here dressed up. You can come in here from hiking. We want to see everybody's faces.
That Skydive Chicago brings in people from all around the country, sometimes world. And it is cool because if you're sitting there and somebody's speaking a different language or they have a different license plate out front, it may be because they were skydiving earlier in the day, right?
Yes.
I found that sometimes there's just the most interesting conversations happening around us while we're there. But there's a lot of locals, too. And one other thing I like about your place is that we'll see you and a couple of the other managers a lot. It seems like there's some consistency on the staff there, too.
Yes. We do. We do our best to retain our staff. They are always, sometimes they grow and go on to college and do other great things, but they always come back to see us. So I love that. But we have a great staff. My management staff, we are all very hospitality oriented. We all were former servers and bartenders. So
We
have been in the hospitality field. We understand it. We want to be out there talking to the people and, you know, whether it's getting feedback or just listening to their stories and talking about our beautiful town, because everybody mentions how beautiful our downtown area is, and they just love it. So it's interesting to hear them. We want to be out there helping our team and also just being very hospitality-oriented people.
A lot of people I know who come visit us when we're out there, and we take them there, and they go, this would fit right into one of the neighborhoods of Chicago. It's really good food at a really good beer joint, and that's what you've got there. One last thing. I don't know if you can talk much about this, Karina, but the Lone Buffalo is a restaurant in a family of restaurants throughout the Chicagoland area that's growing, right?
Yes, it is. Right now we have locations in Lockport, Illinois called the Lock and Mule, and one in Glenview called Hangar 2, and one in DeKalb called the Keg and Kernel. And yes, we are, you know, we're always looking for beautiful neighborhoods to put these places in.
Yeah, those are great locations that kind of play off the local economy or history, so they dial right in. And that's why this restaurant's called the Lone Buffalo. It's not too far from Buffalo, Rock State Park, etc. All right, Karina, it's good to talk to you. I'll see you out there sometime soon.
I love that. Keep coming in.
Karina Ritchie is the general manager at the Lone Buffalo in Ottawa. That's your hometown today. More business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new type of store is in development at McDonald's. It'll be called Cosmics and will hit test markets sometime early next year. The company's CEO teased the new format during an earnings call but provided few details. It's named after a character from McDonaldland who appeared in the 1980s and 90s. The alien character visited Earth to satisfy his cravings. McDonald's announced earlier this year it had plans to open more stores around the world, including here in the U.S. In its earnings report, the Chicago-based company reported a 12% increase in same-store sales. Car maker Stellantis could breathe new life into its Belvedere assembly plant. The facility was shut down indefinitely this spring, but could get a new production line of electric vehicles. The company's CEO says it'll depend on the success of EV sales in the U.S. Stellantis is ramping up production of the Jeep Recon, the Wagoneer, and the Dodge Charger, all electric versions. The Belvedere plant produced the Jeep Cherokee. When it was idled, about 1,300 workers were laid off. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And Joseph Lindsley's fascinating daily dispatches from Ukraine on Bob's show make me wonder how our farmer friend Nick Gordachuk is getting along, especially this past week with Russia's barrage of attacks on Ukraine's grain ports. I was able to make contact with Nick, and we'll hear from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Ukrainian farmer Nick Gordachuk is back with us. He farms about 1,500 acres near Kyiv. But before we get to the farm report, Nick, how are you and your family doing?
Thanks God, everybody's healthy and safe.
Except that Nick's family is one of millions separated by the war. When the attacks began on Kyiv, he scooped everybody up and fled to France.
Still traveling back and forth from time to time. My youngest is still abroad, and she just finished her fourth grade in school.
And she'll be visiting home in the next month, but Nick says she may not be able to stay because the attacks continue.
We all want to get back to normal life. We want to get to business as usual. We want to spend time with our families, with our friends. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we have our freedom And we want to make sure we have some guarantees about the future. I believe that evil should be punished. I consider Russia as a terrorist state, and for all the death, what we have about 600 children who died during this Russian aggression. I think they should be punished for that, and also I think we should gain back our territory.
In Kyiv, Nick says life is almost back to normal, wartime normal, not our kind of normal.
And you almost don't notice it's war, only at night when you get alarms several times a night, and especially now it's been quite often. But for the rest, during daytime, you almost would think it's a normal life goes on. That's also unfortunate that people are getting used to it.
And how's it going for Ukrainian farmers?
I would have to say that we are between surviving and struggling.
More about that from Nick tomorrow. On the food calendar, it's a big day with National Chili Dog Day. It's National Creme Brulee Day and National Scotch Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
What would you guess? The numbers are in. People who work from home are more efficient getting more work done or less efficient getting less work done. Dan DeVesey joins us, journalist covering American trends like this for The Hill. Dan, you're on WGN. What does the research say?
Well, I guess it's good news for the, 94% of us who would rather work from home at least part of the time. That's a hugely popular thing to do now. And this kind of forced experiment of the pandemic enabled researchers to really study remote work. And there's some big landmark studies that have shown enhanced hourly work and enhanced productivity. And that seems to be almost across the board. I don't see any big studies that have said otherwise.
I wonder how or why that is. What's going on there?
Well, you think about it. One of these big studies looked at 27 countries, and it found that, think about it. You're not driving downtown to the Loop every day, so you're saving on average 72 minutes in daily commuting time. This is across, you know, the whole industrialized world. And the average person who's conscientious is going to plow almost half that time back into work. So that means if you're not commuting on the Dan Ryan or whatever, or on the L, you're going to work a couple more hours a week because you're going to spend some of that saved time doing work. So it's kind of as simple as that. Now, there's some people who are going to just, you know, watch Oprah or shop on eBay, but most of us, 70, 80% of us are conscientious and want to get work done. So that's kind of been the good news in all this research.
Is it that people are more efficient and saving on commute time, or is it that now they're working even more because they're living at work? I wonder if there's a little resentment built into this.
Well, at the beginning, you remember back in 2020, a lot of people were leery about remote work and remember Zoom fatigue.
Yeah.
But I think in hindsight, a lot of that was more just people being freaked out about the pandemic itself, because that number I cited, 94%, that's from Gallup. And Gallup has been asking people about this. And from before the pandemic to now, it's up to 94% of Americans who say they would rather work at home at least part of the time. It's wildly popular. So if there's a life work balance problem, you know, I guess we're willing to live with it.
I wonder what you or this says to the employers out there that for some reason want people back in. Do the bosses not understand this?
Oh, well, if you go back 15, 20 years, I think I gained the ability to really work from home maybe 15 years ago. I'm trying to think of when we all got that kind of stuff where all of our intranet stuff was just right there on your laptop.
Yeah.
But employers resisted it because nobody knew what was going to happen, right? And now if you follow the research, it looks like it's fine, but it's not for everyone, right? If you are in a company that has collaborative work where there's a lot of team work, that's harder, the experts say, to do remotely. If you're doing more solitary work, like me, writing articles or something, or finishing tax returns, you're fine working remotely as long as you're reasonably self-directed. What the employers are going to do over the next 10, 20, who knows? I think, though, that people at the top of their game are going to start asking or even demanding hybrid or remote work in the future.
At The Hill, remote employees work longer and harder, studies show. Clip that article out. Well, that's old school. Forward it.
Sure.
Forward it to your boss. By the way, you're dropping some Chicago references in there. You're a Northwestern guy, aren't you?
Lincoln Park High School. Yeah, Northwestern journalism. I've got a book coming out about the Blues Brothers.
Oh, that makes sense. You did a book called King of Blues. You shared a, here's your bio, if I may. You shared a 2001 Team Pulitzer Prize. Your first book was I Forgot to Remember, and your second book, I don't know this one. Andy and Don came out in 2015, began as a journalistic exploration into the storied career of his late brother-in-law, Don Knotts. What am I reading here?
That's right. I talked about this book on WGN several years ago. It was really popular in Chicago. It's Andy Griffith and Don Knotts. God bless them. The people at the Hill have given me this wonderful American Trends job, but I do still write books. And I got one about Akron and Belushi coming out next year.
I'm anxious to read that. When is that going to drop? We'll have to have you back.
March.
You happen to know that, don't you? Well, I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk again, but interesting on this trend at the workplace, too. Dan DeVesey is a journalist covering the American trend scene for The Hill. Dan, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, now you're intrigued, aren't you? I am.